Today we are reading from Canto 3, Chapter 2. Chapter 2 is entitled Remembrance of Lord Krishna, and today we are on verse 15. Svashanta rupeshva itare svaruper abhyardhyamaneshva anukampitatma paravaresho mahadamshayukto yajopi jato bhagavan yathagni. Svashanta rupeshu. Unto the peaceful devotees of the Lord. Itare. Others non-devotees. Swarupe. According to their own modes of nature. Abhyardhyamaneshu. Being harassed by. Anukampita Atma. The all-compassionate Lord. Para avara, spiritual and material. Isha, controller. Mahat amsha yukta, accompanied by the plenary portion of. Of mahatattva, sorry. He, certainly. Aja, the unborn. Api, although. Jataha, is born. Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. Yatha, as if. Agni, the fire. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The personality of Godhead, the all-compassionate controller of both the spiritual and material creations, is unborn. But when there is friction between His peaceful devotees and persons who are in the material modes of nature, He takes birth just like fire, accompanied by the Mahatattva. Purport. The devotees of the Lord are by nature peaceful, because they have no material hankering. A liberated soul has no hankering, and therefore he has no lamentation. One who wants to possess also laments when he loses his possession. Devotees have no hankerings for material possessions and no hankerings for spiritual salvation. They are situated in the transcendental loving service of the Lord as a matter of duty, and they do not mind where they are or how they have to act. Karmis, jnanis and yogis all hanker to possess some material or spiritual assets. Karmis want material possessions, jnanis and yogis want spiritual possessions. But devotees do not want any material or spiritual assets. They want only to serve the Lord anywhere in the material or spiritual worlds that the Lord desires. And the Lord is always specifically compassionate towards such devotees. The karmis, jnanis and yogis have their particular mentalities in the modes of nature, and therefore they are called itara or non-devotees. These itaras, including even the yogis, sometimes harass the devotees of the Lord. Durvasa Muni, a great yogi, harassed Maharaj Ambarish because the latter was a great devotee of the Lord. And the great karmi and jnani Hiranyakashipu even harassed his own son, Vaishnava son Prahalad Maharaj. There are many instances of such harassment of the peaceful devotees of the Lord by the itaras. When such friction takes place, the Lord, out of his great compassion towards his pure devotees, appears in person accompanied by his plenary portion controlling the Mahatattva. The Lord is everywhere in both the material and spiritual domains, and he appears for the sake of his devotees when there is friction between his devotees and the non-devotees. As electricity is generated by friction of matter anywhere and everywhere, the Lord, being all-pervading, appears because of the friction of devotees and non-devotees. When Lord Krishna appears on a mission, all his plenary portions accompany him. When he appeared as the son of Vasudev, there were differences of opinion about his incarnation. Some said he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Some said he is an incarnation of Narayan. And others said he is the incarnation of Shirodakshai Vishnu. But actually, he is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. And Narayan, the Purusha, and all other incarnations accompany him to function as different parts of his pastimes. Mahad Amsha Yukta indicates that he is accompanied by the Purushas who create the Mahatattva. It is confirmed in the Vedic hymns, Mahan Tam Vibhum Atmanam. Lord Krishna appeared just like electricity when there was friction between Kamsa and Vasudeva and Ugrasen. Vasudeva and Ugrasen were the Lord's devotees, and Kamsa, a representative of the Karmis and Jnanis, was a non-devotee. Krishna, as he is compared to the sun. He first appeared from the ocean of the womb of Devaki, and gradually he satisfied the inhabitants of the places surrounding Mathura, just as the sun enlivens the lotus flower in the morning. After gradually rising to the meridian of Dwaraka, the Lord set like the sun, placing everything in darkness, as described by Uddhava. Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sva Padantikam Mukam Karoti Vachavalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyayvacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we see in this section of the Bhagavatam, the conversation between Vidura and Uddhava is continuing. Just to give a bit of context, Vidura, as we read in the previous chapter, he has been driven out of the kingdom by Duryodhan. He was actually insulted because Vidura, like a sadhu, was very cutting, and he spoke the truth in the court of Dhritarashtra. He actually told Dhritarashtra that it is because of Duryodhan you are going to see the end of your dynasty. So you better cut him off rather than allow the war to take place. But Dhritarashtra was not listening to Vidura's good advice. He was very, very attached to his son. So Prabhupada says he was not only materially blind, but Dhritarashtra was also spiritually blind. So no heed to Vidura's good advice. And Duryodhan saw that his father is not taking any action when Vidura has advised. So he actually took the opportunity and he insulted Vidura in the entire court in front of all the ministers. And then he said that drive this son of a maidservant out of the kingdom and don't leave him with anything except his breath. So Vidura, but he was a saintly devotee. So he took this as actually an arrangement of the Lord. He did not retaliate, nor did he defend himself. Nor did he think that, you know, I've served this kingdom for such a long time and this is the treatment I get in return. He just took it as the mercy of the Lord. And he actually saw that the Lord is arranging for him to go away from the scene, because otherwise he would have had to take sides. And because he was part of Duryodhana's kingdom, he might have to participate in the war on Duryodhana's side, like most of the devotees had to do. But now he's getting an opportunity to not take any sides, and especially not take the side of Adharma. And also he thought that this is a very good opportunity to go on pilgrimage. So Vidura has actually now started doing his pilgrimage. And during his pilgrimage, he visits various holy places, which are mentioned again in the previous chapter. And then he comes to the banks of Yamuna, where he meets the great devotee Uddhava. And it takes a pure devotee to recognize another pure devotee. So Vidura immediately understood that I'll be able to hear so much pastimes of Lord Krishna from Uddhava's mouth, because Uddhava was such an intimate associate of Lord Krishna. So Vidura actually sits down on the banks of Yamuna with Uddhava, and he wants to listen from Uddhava all the glorifications of the Lord. So the entire first chapter are the questions which Vidura poses. And he asks so many questions about Krishna's welfare, about the Pandavas' welfare, about the Yadus, about the Prishnis, about all the Ugrasena, like different devotees. And then he also asks whether, you know, Krishna is still there on the planet. So all these questions he is asking. And now Uddhava in this chapter has started answering all these questions. So in the previous verse, we saw Uddhava was describing about the gopis. And now in this verse, Uddhava is glorifying the aspect, the compassionate nature of the Lord. And how the Lord just appears. Like it is said, Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma sansthapanathaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So in the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that whenever there is irreligion, the Lord appears to actually cut down all that irreligion and re-establish dharma. But Prabhupada explains that these activities can be done by the Lord's expansions. The Lord Himself as Krishna does not need to come. But why does the Lord come Himself as Krishna? And Prabhupada says it is mainly for His devotees that Krishna appears. Because Krishna is so much in debt or so much in love with His devotees that He can never see His devotees suffering. So like it is said here, whenever there is a friction between the peaceful devotees of the Lord and the non-devotees, the Lord appears to protect His devotees and also to give pleasure to all His devotees. So that is the main purpose of Krishna's appearing as He is, as Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Otherwise there is no purpose. Krishna can achieve everything through His energies. He can achieve everything through His expansions. But this aspect Krishna does not leave to anybody else, to come and protect His devotees and to come and give pleasure to His devotees. So Prabhupada mentions in the purport that the devotees of the Lord are by nature very peaceful. And why are they peaceful? Why are they able to achieve that peaceful state of mind? Prabhupada explains it's because they do not have any hankerings. Neither do they have material hankerings, nor do they have spiritual hankerings for assets, especially for possessions. Because whenever there is a hankering, then lamentation arises. And we know Krishna explains that in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter. And then whenever there is attachment to the objects which we desire or which we hanker for, and if we don't get those objects of our desire, then immediately there is frustration, it leads to lust, anger, and all these vices then come up in the person who is hankering for all these material assets. But the devotees of the Lord do not have any such desires. In fact, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Madhya Leela, it is explained by Lord Chaitanya, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Ata Eva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakali Ashanti. What does that mean? Krishna Bhakta Nishkama. Krishna Bhaktas are all Nishkama. They do not have any hankerings for any material assets. And Ata Eva Shanta, that is why they are able to be very Shanta or peaceful. But Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami. Bhuktis means out and out karmis, who are actually out for material possessions, who are out for sense enjoyment. The whole purpose of their life is sense enjoyment. So obviously they are not going to be peaceful. And we see in the material world, we see there is so much friction between people just because everybody wants to possess. Everybody wants unlimited sense gratification. Then mukti, the second class is mukti, or people who are desiring liberation. So even those people are not shanta because they actually want something. When they pray to the Lord, they are actually praying that, oh, give me liberation or give me mukti from this material world. So again, they are not able to be peaceful. They are not like the devotees. That for, you know, swarga apavarga vartamani, they are happy whether they are placed in heavenly planets or the hellish planets or wherever Krishna wants. They just want to serve the Lord in whatever situation Krishna places them. But they are not like that. The muktis, they want to, the jnanis, they actually want to get out of this material world. The next people are siddhis. So siddhi means the yogis, like Prabhupada mentions. They also want lots of siddhis. They are praying or they are meditation or the whole purpose of their yoga is so that they acquire lots of siddhis and they can have them control over people or they can have control over their mind. So even these people are not able to be peaceful at all. And therefore it is said that bhukti mukti siddhi kami shakala ashanti. They are absolutely not able to be peaceful in this material world. But then Prabhupada also explains that but devotees also actually want to go back to the spiritual world. Then isn't that a hankering they have or isn't that a desire they have in their heart? Yes, they do have that desire. But it is not that they are hankering for that desire so much that if they don't get it, they start lamenting. The devotees actually feel, yes, I want to serve Krishna in the spiritual world. But if Krishna is not taking me to the spiritual world, and if Krishna's desire is that I serve Him in this material world in some way, or I go to the hellish planets and serve Him, then also it doesn't matter. And we see this in the example of Bali Maharaj. We see that Bali Maharaj, he gave everything to the Lord. Actually, Bali Maharaj is the emblem or the embodiment who perfected Atma Nivedanam. So he actually, the devotional process of Atma Nivedanam, he gave everything to the Lord. The Lord asked him 3 steps of land and Bali Maharaj gave him everything. Whatever Bali Maharaj possessed, he gave, but still there was no place to keep the 3rd step. So Bali Maharaj offered his body, his head to the Lord. But because he had failed in his promise of giving, you know, land enough to put the Lord's 3rd step, the Lord sent him to the hellish planets. And even though Bali Maharaj was sent down to the hellish planets, and before being sent down, actually Garuda brings Varuna to arrest Bali Maharaj. And in front of everyone, Bali Maharaj is standing, so humiliated, if you see from material consideration, so humiliated. He's standing there bound by the rope of Varuna, and then he's just waiting for the Lord to give him punishment. And the Lord actually sends him to the hellish planets. But even then, Bali Maharaj does not, the verses describe that Bali Maharaj does not at all deter from his promise of giving the three steps of land. He's so peaceful. He knows this is the arrangement of the Lord. So that this is because Bali Maharaj is a Mahajan. He's a great devotee of the Lord. So he's setting an example that even if a devotee is sent to the hellish planet by the Lord, the devotee does not get agitated, nor does the devotee retaliate. That, my Lord, I gave you everything and this is what I get in return. That's not what was Bali Maharaj's outlook. So Prabhupada, in fact, in the life of Prabhupada also we see this. That how he was so peaceful and how nothing could agitate him. Once at an airport, Prabhupada was asked this question by one of the reporters, that how do we know that you have control over your senses? And Prabhupada says that you put me in a room full of naked women and I will not get agitated, but you all will get agitated. So because Prabhupada had transcended the three modes of material nature, he was on that platform where all these bodily conceptions did not matter. He was not seeing these differences between body of a woman, man, and how to enjoy those bodies. And even if we see in Leelamrita, the entire episode of obtaining the Juhu temple, we see that Prabhupada was extremely peaceful. It was actually such a stressful situation where, the person who had promised to give the land was giving the devotees such a hard time. And at one point, actually, Prabhupada and, the devotees lost the land because the devotees got so much under pressure and they got so scared of the person who was troubling them that they actually handed the land back to them. But still, Prabhupada, we see his reaction was never one of getting agitated. His reaction was never one who would, oh, now everything is lost and get frustrated. He was still very peaceful. He was just very peacefully guiding the devotees how to take care. And he was still not that all the time. He was dealing himself with that person who had promised the land. He just left it to the devotees. So if he was very attached, we see this in the life of Prabhupada. If he would have been very attached, he would have been there. No, I can't leave this temple and go. I have to be here to protect this land. But no, Prabhupada just left it to the devotees to deal. And when he was in Ahmedabad, I think at that time, when all these things were going on. So we see in the life of Prabhupada also that absolutely no agitation. He was such a peaceful devotee and there is so much to learn from his life. And we see that Krishna actually then comes to protect such devotees who are absolutely peaceful. And when they are really being troubled by these itara, as mentioned in this verse, or these non-devotees who are in the grip of the material modes of nature and their only purpose is to harass the devotees. So then Krishna actually comes to protect, and Krishna somehow arranges for their devotees to be protected. And we will speak about one such devotee today who was so peaceful that the Lord came again and again to protect this devotee. And this devotee was harassed, this devotee was condemned, this devotee was abused, but still he never complained, he never got agitated. And it's his disappearance day today. So we'll talk about the great devotee Haridas Thakur from Chaitanya Charitamrita, whose disappearance day is today, and we'll take a few minutes to glorify his life and also his passing away, since it's his disappearance day. So as most of us know, Haridas Thakur was a great devotee of the Lord, as has been mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he appeared around Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time. Now Haridas Thakur was actually an outcast. From Hindu point of view, if you see, he was born in a Muslim family, a Mlechha family, and he was actually an outcast. But still, he had such deep conviction on the power of the holy name. It's not that, he thought it's a Hindu religion, I'm born in a Muslim religion, how can I adopt this religion? No. He had such deep conviction, such faith in the holy names of the Lord, that he had dedicated his entire life to chanting the holy names of the Lord and to spreading the glories of the holy names of the Lord. So we know Haridas Thakur used to taken a vow to chant 300,000 names of the Lord every day. That means 192 rounds. And not that, finish those rounds and then just relax that, oh my God, I finished the marathon of chanting 192 rounds. For us, for especially devotees like me, I really feel so good when my chanting is over. That, oh, my 16 rounds are over. But it wasn't like that. He used to chant his 192 rounds and then he would go out and preach the glories of the holy name to others. He would be dancing in kirtan or he would be just going around requesting everyone to chant. So that is how Haridas Thakur's deep faith was in the power of the holy name. So being an outcast, he was actually condemned, he was actually abused, and he was not allowed in most of the Hindu temples at that time, because during like 500 years ago or 550 years ago when Haridas Thakur had appeared, the caste system was very strong. In fact, it was so strong that if you know one Muslim puts some water on a Hindu, then that person becomes a Muslim. And then he is considered an outcast. And that is the punishment which was given to some of the Hindus by the Muslim leaders. They would just sprinkle some water and they used to threaten all these Hindus that we'll make you into Muslims. So the caste system was so strong, strongly prevalent. And because of that, Haridas Thakur was so much harassed by the others. Not only by Muslims, because he had left their religion. He was also harassed by Hindus because they could not accept that how can a Muslim follow our religion. So from both sides, he was being beaten. But then Haridas Thakur was not one who was attached to the external aspects of religion. He could have easily thought that, you know, I'm trying to adopt this Hindu religion. He could have thought about the Hindus. And they are still troubling me and they are treating me like an outcast. And why should I be attached to this religion? Let me give up this religion. No, that was not the mood of Haridas Thakur, because he was a man of essence. So he was tasting the sweetness of the holy names of the Lord. And how could he give up? So it was all internal, like Prabhupada says, bhakti is an internal process. So for Haridas Thakur, it was an internal process. He was not attached, oh, somebody is out, you know, outcasting me, or somebody is really abusing me, or somebody is condemning me. For those aspects of the religion did not matter to Haridas Thakur. He was so deep in his chanting that there was nothing or no external situation which could deter him from the holy names of the Lord, or which could deter him from devotional service to the Lord. So we see that in the story of Ramachandra Khan, how Haridas Thakur reacted and how Haridas Thakur coped with the test which was sent by Ramachandra Khan. So Ramachandra Khan was actually a so-called learned Brahmin, a so-called learned pundit of that time. He was a very well-educated man, very wealthy and on a very big post. But he was so envious of Haridas Thakur and he could not tolerate that Haridas Thakur's name and fame is spreading so much because of him being Namacharya or him chanting the holy names of the Lord so well. And he could not tolerate that somebody else from outside is so popular in his own religion. So Ramachandra Khan, like a typical, you know, materialist who's out to harass devotees, he actually arranged, he hired a prostitute. And he sent this prostitute to test Haridas Thakur and to actually shake Haridas Thakur's faith, so that he thought Haridas Thakur will fall prey to this beautiful prostitute and then Haridas Thakur's name and fame and reputation will be gone. So as soon as the prostitute approached Haridas Thakur, it is not that Haridas, you know, normally how devotees would react or a person would react, that if they see this danger coming, they would just leave that place. But Haridas Thakur's reaction was not like that. Haridas Thakur sat there because he had deep compassion in his heart. So he thought that this is an opportunity for me to actually convert this lady and make her into a devotee. And with that sole purpose, he actually endured the prostitute coming to him. Like for 3 nights, the prostitute went to him. So he endured and he actually told the prostitute to wait till all his chanting is over. And just because of Haridas Thakur's association and hearing the chanting of the holy names from such a pure devotee's mouth, it transformed the heart of that prostitute. So what the prostitute did, she actually shaved her head and she became such a great devotee of the Lord. She herself started chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra and she was worshipping Tulsi Devi every day. She just gave away all her material possessions, because obviously she is a prostitute, she had earned so much money. But she gave away all her material possessions. She put on a simple white sari like widows put on. And then she actually moved into the kutir, the bhajan kutir of Haridas Thakur. And at that time Haridas Thakur left. As soon as he saw that he has done his work and the prostitute has got transformed, Haridas Thakur actually left from that place. And then he went away. And when this episode happened, that the prostitute got, the hearts got transformed and she has become such a nice devotee of the Lord. There were people who were coming from far and wide just to serve that devotee, that prostitute who had become a devotee, by bringing lots of fruits, like food and offerings and all these things. And actually, Haridas Thakur's fame became even more greater. So if we see, Ramachandra Khan had sent this prostitute to actually spoil Haridas Thakur's reputation. But it actually had an opposite effect. Because of this whole episode, Haridas Thakur's fame and reputation increased. But Haridas Thakur did not stay back. That, oh, now, you know, let me hear, people are glorifying me. As, you know, conditioned souls like us, we like to hear our own glorification. Haridas Thakur immediately left that place and went away. So this is how Haridas Thakur was, absolutely peaceful, not getting agitated. He did not even go and retaliate with Ramachandra Khan or go and fight with him. That, why did you do this to me? What had I done to you? Nothing. He just did his work, compassionate. Because of his compassionate nature, he transformed the prostitute's heart and then he left that place. So that was the nature of Haridas Thakur. So so many devotees, like this is before Lord Chaitanya had started manifesting his pastimes as a devotee. There was Balaram Acharya, Yadunandan Acharya, all these great devotees. They had heard of Haridas Thakur and they knew what a great devotee he was. So they actually invited him to speak on the holy name. They had invited lots of people from that area, lots of devotees from that area, and they invited Haridas Thakur to give a talk on the power of the holy name. And Haridas Thakur started talking. He started quoting scriptures. He was speaking his own realizations. But there was one learned Brahmana in the assembly who could not tolerate hearing from Haridas Thakur. That Brahmana was still on that platform. That how can this outcast speak about our own religion? How can he speak about the glories of the holy name? What authority does he have? He's actually born in a mlecha family and now he's coming and talking to us. We learned Brahmanas about the glories of the holy name. How can he say like this? So this Brahmana actually gets very agitated when he sees Haridas Thakur speaking. And he challenges Haridas Thakur in the entire assembly in front of all the devotees who were present there. He actually tells Haridas Thakur that what you are speaking all these things, that the holy name can give prema, and you are saying that prema is mukti is actually a byproduct of prema, and you are saying that mukti is nothing, devotees should not hanker for mukti, it is all, you know, you should hanker for love of God through the chanting of the holy names. How can you speak like this? Because this Brahmin was very learned in Vedic scriptures and Shastras, so he was quoting from that point of view, that how mukti is the highest. And how, you know, how can you just say by chanting of the holy names prema, the highest goal is prema, and how that can be achieved. So he challenged this Brahmana openly, the Brahmana challenged Haridas Thakur openly in the assembly. And he actually cursed Haridas Thakur. He said that if anything that you have said is not true, and I know that it is not true, your nose will fall off. This is how he spoke to Haridas Thakur. And Haridas Thakur very humbly was explaining that actually I am quoting everything from the scriptures. I am not telling you this all just, you know, philosophy out of my own pocket sort of. He said, I am saying everything from the scriptures. Everything is mentioned in the scriptures. The efficacy of the holy name, the potency of the holy name, all these things are mentioned in the scriptures. But that Brahmana did not listen and he cursed and he went away. And we know what happened to the Brahmana after that. The Lord, you know, as it is mentioned in this verse, the Lord cannot tolerate if his peaceful devotees are being harassed by non-devotees. So the Lord actually arranged for that Brahmana to contact leprosy. And that Brahmana's own nose actually fell off. And when Haridas Thakur came to know about this, it's not that, oh see, how you troubled me and now you learnt your own lesson. That was not the mood of Haridas Thakur. He actually felt so sorry for that Brahmana that, you know, such a thing has happened to him. He was deep down in his heart, he had so much compassion. So he was feeling so sorry that this interaction had to happen with the Brahmana and now his nose has fallen off. But all the devotees, they actually came to Haridas Thakur because they were feeling bad. They had invited Haridas Thakur and now Haridas Thakur had to be insulted like this. So they were feeling bad and they went and apologized to Haridas Thakur. But Haridas Thakur said, no, I'm feeling sorry that this person had to face like this and his nose has fallen off. So then Haridas Thakur also moves to Fulia after that and he meets Advaita Acharya. And Advaita Acharya actually recognizes Haridas Thakur's greatness. He knows Advaita Acharya was actually Brahmana, the Shiromani, or the most, the example of the Brahmanas, the leader of all the Brahmana community in that area. But Advaita Acharya was not such a Brahmana who was just going by externals. That, oh, Haridas Thakur is not from the Hindu community. And therefore he should be treated as an outcast. It's okay if he's chanting the holy names, but he's not actually a Brahmin, so you know he should not be actually taken into the circle of Brahmanas. No, Advaita Acharya knew the glories of Haridas Thakur. And therefore, when Advaita Acharya was performing the Shraddha ceremony or the Pinda rites, the last rites of his father, he had kept a ceremony for that. So in that, all the Brahmins, like all the exalted Brahmins of that area had come. And the system is that the first offering of that Shraddha is given to the most exalted of all the Brahmanas, or the most senior of all the Brahmanas, that offering should be given to. And whom did Advaita Acharya give that offering to? Not going by externals, he actually gave it to Haridas Thakur. And all the other Brahmins were shocked that Advaita Acharya is actually the leader. He's our leader. He's Brahmana Shiromani and he's doing such an act. But Advaita Acharya was not afraid that he'll be condemned by the other Brahmanas, or what will the other Brahmanas say about him if he does such an act. He actually knew the glories of Haridas Thakur, and he knew that Haridas Thakur is actually the best of the Brahmanas, because he's a pure Vaishnava, he's Namacharya, so he's the best of the Brahmanas. And the if any honor has to be given to anybody, then that entire honor is deserved by Haridas Thakur. So Advaita Acharya knew that. And therefore, Advaita Acharya gave that position or that exalted honor to Haridas Thakur. And in that way, actually set an example and show to the other Brahmins that don't go by these externals of he being from a Mlecha family or something like that. Look at his qualities and look at his character. And look at the devotional service or the love he has for the Lord. Recognize that. Recognizing that, I have given him this honor and this position. So Haridas Thakur had so much deep faith in the holy names. And when he was chanting, and he used to dance on the banks of the Ganga, and he used to inspire others also to chant. And seeing Haridas Thakur's ecstatic mood, there were so many in that area who had started taking up the process of devotional service and chanting the holy names of God. And when the Muslims saw this, that you know so many people are chanting, they went and complained to the Muslim ruler. And they said that this fellow is actually an outcast, and he is inspiring others also to chant the holy names. He is transforming everyone into chanting the holy names, and everyone is doing loud kirtan. So y'all please deal with him appropriately. And the Muslim leader actually arrests Haridas Thakur. And when he is brought in front of the leader by the soldiers, actually that leader tells Haridas Thakur that you are born in a Muslim family, such a glorious religion you are born in, and why are you doing this? Why are you adopting another religion? Why don't you again come back to our own religion and follow the Muslim religion? But Haridas Thakur said that it is not about religion, whether it's a Muslim religion or a Hindu religion. It is about the deep faith I have in the chanting of the holy name. And it is about what I am experiencing when I'm chanting of the holy name. I am tasting the sweetness. For me, it is nectar. So at any cost, I cannot give up this chanting of the holy name. And the Muslim actually threatened him that if you don't give up the chanting of the holy names, we'll have to punish you. But Haridas Thakur said that I cannot help it but chant the holy names of the Lord. That has become my life and soul. So how are you asking me to separate from this? So then we know the pastime that Haridas Thakur was dragged into 22 marketplaces and he was beaten in all those 22 marketplaces. And the soldiers who were beating him got so exhausted, because Haridas Thakur was not dying. They thought if somebody is killed, like beaten mercilessly with whips in 22 marketplaces, he would definitely give up his body. But Haridas Thakur was not giving up his body, and they get exhausted. And they actually request Haridas Thakur that what is wrong with you? If you don't die, our soul leader will kill us. So you please do something. And again Haridas Thakur's compassionate nature came out. He said, oh, your leader will kill you all? And they said, yes, we will definitely be punished by him if we don't declare to them that we have killed you by whipping you. So then Haridas Thakur said, okay, I'll die. And Haridas Thakur actually withdrew his breath and he went into deep samadhi. And the soldiers checked that actually there was no breath, and they thought he has died. So then they went to the Hindus, the so-called Hindus whose religion they thought Haridas Thakur is following. And they told the Hindus that, do you want to burn Haridas Thakur? Like cremate him, that which is normally the custom for Hindus. And the Hindus said, no, he was actually an outcast. We don't want to burn him and in that way, you know, give him, because it is said in the scriptures, when you burn someone, they can go on the path of liberation. So we don't want to give him that path of liberation, because he was not from our religion. He was a Mlecha. So then these Muslim soldiers go to the Muslims and they say that he was actually born in our religion. So do you all want to bury him? And even the Muslims reject. They say that no. If we bury someone, that means we are opening the path of paradise. So we cannot do that. So then the Muslim soldiers think, what to do? Neither are the Hindus ready to burn him, nor are the Muslims ready to bury him. So then someone advises them that just throw him in the Ganga like a piece of trash. See, this is what the pure devotees of the Lord have to go through sometime. So the Muslim soldiers actually take him and put him in the Ganga. And then after some time, Haridas Thakur comes out of his samadhi. And he just swims and he comes out. And it's not that, you know, he knew what had happened. So what would normally a person do? He would just go into hiding and not come in front of that Muslim leader and the soldiers. But he actually goes and meets the Muslim leader and the soldiers. And he tells them that, you know, I'm back like this. And the Muslim leader falls at the feet of Haridas Thakur. Because he recognizes that this is a great saint. He's a great devotee of the Lord. So these were the glories of Haridas Thakur. And we'll discuss for 2-3 minutes about his disappearance. So when Haridas Thakur was in Jagannath Puri, Lord Chaitanya had arranged, because Haridas Thakur was so humble that actually, no, if Lord Chaitanya had arranged, he could have entered Jagannath Puri temple. But he was so humble, he said, no, I'm an outcast. How can I even come near that temple? I'm a mlecha, I'm the most fallen, I'm the most abominable person. So I will definitely not come, even in the vicinity of the temple. So he was staying far away, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had personally arranged for a residence for Haridas Thakur, which was called as Siddha Bakula. So Haridas Thakur used to live there, and because he was not coming into the temple, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally used to take the Mahaprasad of Lord Jagannath, and he used to take it every day to Haridas Thakur. And then in the Haridas Thakur's kutir, they used to sit for 2-3 hours and they used to do Harikatha. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to relish Haridas Thakur's association so much. He used to value Haridas Thakur's association so much. So one day, under Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction, his personal servant Govinda, he actually brought Mahaprasad for Haridas Thakur. And he saw that Haridas Thakur was lying on his back. So by this time, Haridas Thakur had become very old and very feeble. So he saw he was lying on his back and he was looking at the sky and he was like struggling to chant his rounds. So Govinda says and comes and he says that, O Haridas Thakur, please get up. I have brought this Mahaprasad of Lord Jagannath for you. Please honor it immediately. And then Haridas Thakur tells Govinda, he says that, what can I do? I have not finished my vow of completing my rounds. How can I honor, eat? And because his vow was that only after he finishes his rounds, he will actually eat any prasad. So he said, since I have not finished my vow, how can I honor this prasad? But on the other hand, he knew the injunction that if somebody gives you prasad, Mahaprasad, then it should never be rejected. That is also an offense to Mahaprasad. So he says, oh, what do I do? You have brought this prasad. I don't want to break my vow and eat it before I have finished my rounds. But at the same time, I don't want to dishonor Mahaprasad. So then Haridas Thakur actually pays obeisances to the Mahaprasad. And he just takes one small particle from that Mahaprasad and he puts it in his mouth. So in this way, he honors the Mahaprasad and he also did not break his vow of eating before completing his prescribed rounds. So actually, Govinda then goes and reports this to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And next day, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to Haridas Thakur's kutir. And he tells Haridas Thakur, he sees that Haridas Thakur has become so old. So he asks Haridas Thakur that, oh Thakur, how are you? And Haridas Thakur tells Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says that my body is well, but my mind is diseased. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asks, why are you saying that? He said that my mind is diseased because I'm somehow or the other not able to finish or not able to keep up my vow of chanting 300,000 names of the Lord. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually requests him. He says, Haridas Thakur, you have become so old. Now you please give up your vow. You have strictly followed it throughout your life. And you have done, never even one day you have missed your chanting of 300,000 names of the Lord. But now you are old, it's okay, I am only telling you. You stop this chanting of so many rounds. But Haridas Thakur says that, no, I cannot do that, my Lord. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells him that the purpose for which you had incarnated to spread the glories of the holy name. You had incarnated to set an example of what is it to have such deep faith and conviction in the holy name. So you have completely fulfilled your purpose. People know that you are Namacharya. You have shown by your own example how strictly one must follow the vows of keeping the vow of chanting his prescribed number of rounds. But now it's okay if you give up, or now it's okay if you reduce your rounds. But Haridas Thakur says that, no, I'm actually an untouchable, I'm an outcast. somehow or the other you accepted me as your servant. And therefore I became, like I was able to do my vow of chanting 192 rounds every day. And then Haridas Thakur goes on to tell Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He says that, my Lord, I know that very soon you are going to wind up your material pastimes. You are going to wind up and all your pastimes on this earthly planet, and you are going to go back. You are going to go away from this earthly planet. And he said that, as your devotee, I just have one wish. I do not want to see this pastime of yours. So please, my Lord, please arrange that I actually leave. This one desire you fulfill of mine, that I actually leave this world before I see you doing your pastime of leaving this world. So please arrange that I actually leave this world with your lotus feet on my chest, with my eyes gazing on your lotus face, and while I chanting your holy names, I leave this world. Please, my Lord, you please fulfill this desire. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu becomes so aggrieved when he listens to this request of Haridas Thakur. He tells him that, why are you speaking like this, Haridas Thakur? I am actually so attached to you. Are you not realizing I will miss your association if you leave like this? Why are you speaking? Krishna will fulfill your desire, but why do you want to go away? Why do you want to leave me and go? But Haridas Thakur begs for the Lord to do this. And then the Lord arranges. So next day the Lord brings so many exalted devotees like Ramanand Rai, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Vakreshwar Pandit, Swarup Damodar. He brings all these devotees and they all enter the hut of Haridas Thakur. And they all surround Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur pays obeisances to each of them. And then Haridas Thakur takes the dust of the each and every devotees on his head. And then all the devotees are chanting the kirtan around Haridas Thakur, loud chanting of the Hare Krishna kirtan. And as Haridas Thakur was desiring, he clasps the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He keeps them on his chest. And then his eyes are gazing on the beautiful lotus face of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And continuously Haridas Thakur is chanting, Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Shri Krishna Chaitanya. Like that Haridas Thakur is chanting while all the devotees are doing loud kirtan around him. And in that consciousness and in that state, Haridas Thakur leaves his body. And when he leaves his body in such an atmosphere, all the devotees who had come there, they were astonished. They immediately remember the passing away of Bhishma Dev. Like how Bhishma Dev was sitting on a bed of arrows and he endures cold weather, whatever he endures, still Krishna comes to give him darshan. And only after Bhishma Dev gazes at the lotus face of Krishna, then Bhishma Dev left his body. So all the devotees remember this and they are astonished that Haridas Thakur has left his body in such a great consciousness when loud kirtan is going on and gazing at the face of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has mixed emotions. He's so jubilant because Haridas Thakur had such a glorious departure from this world. At the same time, he is feeling separation from Haridas Thakur. So he lifts Haridas Thakur's body and he starts dancing. And all the devotees also dance in kirtan. And then in a procession, they take Haridas Thakur's body to the ocean. And the Lord personally bathes Haridas Thakur's body in the water of the ocean. And he declares that because his body has been bathed in this water, from today onwards, this holy ocean, which is next to Jagannath Puri, is actually a holy place of pilgrimage. And anybody who comes and dips in this ocean water, they will get so much spiritual benefit. And then Haridas Thakur is buried in the sand. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself does the rite of, you know, putting the first grains of sand on Haridas Thakur. So in this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally performs the rites for Haridas Thakur's passing away, the last rites for his body. And then they arrange a big feast in which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself goes in Jagannath Puri and begs from each and every shopkeeper that, today I have come to you all as a beggar. Please give something for this devotee, exalted devotee who has left, and so that we can arrange for a big feast. And after collecting all ingredients from all these shopkeepers, there is a big feast which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally arranges in the honor of Haridas Thakur's passing away. So we'll end our class here because it's time up. Thank you very much. Granth Raj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.